Chapter 31. Name. 66. Silence. Marlena reveled in it, all the more so because she could break it if she wished. She stooped to pick up a pebble and tossed it against a rock. It made a small thunk, then fell to the ground and was still. Having left the dome with no more clothes than she would have worn on Rota, she felt perfectly free. She had walked straight away from the dome toward the creek, without even watching to check the landmarks. Her mother's last words had been a rather weak plea. "Please, Marlena, remember you said you would stay inside of the dome." She had smiled briefly, but had paid no attention. She might stay in sight, but perhaps not. She did not intend to be hemmed in regardless of what promises she had been forced to make to keep the peace. After all, she was carrying a wave emitter. At any time, she could be located. She herself could use the receiving end of it to sense the direction of the dome's emitter. If she had an accident of some sort, if she fell or was somehow hurt, they could come get her. If a meteor struck her, well, she'd be dead. There would be nothing anyone could do about that, even if she were in sight of the dome. Even allowing for the disturbing thought of meteors, it was all so peaceful and wonderful on Erythro. On Rotor, it was always noisy. Wherever you went, the air quivered and shook and battered your tired ears with sound waves. It must be even worse on Earth, with its 8 billion people and trillions of animals, and its thunderstorms and wild surges of water from the sea and sky. She had once tried to listen to a recording entitled Noises of Earth, had winced at it, and had quickly had enough. But here, on Erythro, there was a wonderful silence. Marlena came to the creek, and the water moved past her with a soft, bubbly sound. She picked up a jagged pebble and tossed it into the water, and there was a small splash. Sounds were not forbidden on Erythro. They were merely doled out as occasional adornments that served to make the surrounding silence more precious. She stamped her foot on the soft clay at the creek's edge. She heard a small, dull thump, and there was the vague impression of a footprint. She bent down, cupped some water in her hand, and tossed it over the soil in front of her. It moistened and darkened in spots, crimson showing against pink. She added more water, and finally placed her right shoe on the dark spot, pressing down. When she lifted her shoe, there was a deeper footprint there. There were occasional rocks in the creek bed, and she used them as stepping stones to cross the water. Marlena kept on, walking vigorously, swinging her arms, taking in deep breaths of air. She knew very well that the oxygen percentage was somewhat lower than it was on Rota. If she ran, she would quickly grow tired, but she lacked the impulse to run. If she ran, she would use up her world more rapidly. She wanted to look at everything. She looked back, and the mound of the dome was visible, especially the bubble that housed the astronomical instruments. That irritated her. She wanted to be far enough away so that she could turn around and see the horizon as a perfect, if irregular, circle, with no intrusion of any sign of humanity, except herself, anywhere. Should she call the dome? Should she tell her mother she would be out of sight for a little while? No, they would just argue. They could receive her carrier wave. They would be able to tell that she was alive, well, and moving around. If they called her, she decided she would ignore them. Really, they must leave her to herself. Her eyes were adjusting to the pinkness of Nemesis and of the land around her in every direction. It was not merely pink. It was all in darks and lights, in purples and oranges, almost yellows in some places. In time, it would become a whole new palette of colors to her heightened senses, as variegated as Rota, but more soothing. What would happen if someday people settled on Erythro, introduced life, built cities? Would they spoil it? Or would they have learned from Earth, and would they go about it in a different way, taking this new untouched world and making it into something close to their heart's desire? Whose heart's desire? That was the problem. Different people would have different ideas, and they would quarrel with each other and pursue irreconcilable ends. Would it be better to leave Erythro empty? Would that be right, when people might enjoy it so? Marlena knew well that she didn't want to leave it. It warmed her, being on this world. She didn't know quite why, but it felt more like home than Rota ever had. Was it some dim, atavistic memory of Earth? Was there a feeling for a huge, endless world in her genes, a longing that a small artificial turning city in space could not fulfill? How could that be? Earth was surely different from Erythro in every possible way but the similarity of size. And if Earth were in her genes, why wouldn't it be in the genes of every human being? But there must be some explanation. Marlena shook her head as though to clear it, and whirled around and around as if she were in the midst of endless space. Strange that Erythro didn't seem barren. On Rota, you could see acres of grain and orchards of fruit trees and a haze of green and amber and the straight line irregularity of human structures. Here on Erythro, however, you saw only the rolling ground interspersed with rocks of all sizes, as though strewn carelessly by some giant hand. Strange, brooding, silent shapes with rivulets of water here and there flowing around and among them. And no life at all, if you didn't count the myriads of tiny germ-like cells that kept the atmosphere full of oxygen, thanks to the energy supply of Nemesis red light. And Nemesis, like any red dwarf, would continue to pour out its careful supply of energy for a couple of 100 billion years, hoarding its energy and seeing to it that Erythro and its tiny prokaryotes were warm and comfortable through all that time. Long after Earth's sun had died and other bright stars born still later had also died, Nemesis would shine on unchanged, and Erythro would roll about Megas unchanged, and the prokaryotes would live and die, also essentially unchanged. Surely human beings would have no right to come to this unchanging world and change it. Yet if she were alone on Erythro, she would need food and companionship. She might return to the dome now and then for supplies, or to refresh a need to see other people, but she could still spend most of her time alone with Erythro. But would not others follow? How could she prevent them? And with others, no matter how few, would not Eden inevitably be ruined? Wasn't it being ruined because she herself had entered Eden? Only she? No, she shouted it. She shouted it loudly in a sudden, eager experiment to see if she could make the alien atmosphere tremble and force it to carry words to her ears. She heard her own voice, but in the flat terrain there were no echoes. Her shout was gone as soon as it sounded. She whirled again. The dome was just a thin shadow on the horizon. It could almost be ignored, but not quite. She wished it was not visible at all. She wanted nothing in view but herself and Erythro. She heard the faint sigh of the wind and knew it had picked up speed. It was not strong enough to feel, and the temperature hadn't dropped, nor was it unpleasant. It was just a faint, ah. She imitated it cheerfully. Ah. Marlena stared up at the sky curiously. The weather forecasters had said it would be clear that day. Was it possible for storms to blow up suddenly and unpredictably on Erythro? Would the wind rise and become uncomfortable? Would clouds whip across the sky and rain begin to fall before she could get back to the dome? That was silly. As silly as the meteors. Of course it rained on Erythro, but right now there were only a few wispy pink clouds above. They moved lazily against the dark and unobstructed sky. There didn't seem to be any sign of a storm. Ah, whispered the wind. Ah, I. It was a double sound, and Marlena frowned. What could be making that sound? Surely the wind could not make the sound by itself. It would have to pass some obstruction and whistle as it did so. But there was nothing of the sort within sight. It was a triple sound now, with the stress on the second sound. Marlena looked around, wondering. She couldn't tell where it was coming from. To make the sound, something had to be vibrating, but she saw nothing, felt nothing. Erythro looked empty and silent. It could make no sound. Again, clearer than before. It was as though it were in her own head, and at that thought, her heart seemed to contract and she shivered. She felt the goose flesh rise on her arms. She didn't have to look. Nothing could be wrong with her head. Nothing. She was waiting to hear it again, and it came, louder, still clearer. Suddenly there was a ring of authority to it. as though it were practicing and growing better. Practicing? Practicing what? And unwillingly, entirely unwillingly, she thought, it's as though someone who can't sound consonants is trying to say my name. As though that were a signal, or her thought had released another spasm of power, or had perhaps sharpened her imagination, she heard, Marlena. Automatically, without knowing she was doing it, she lifted her hands and covered her ears. Marlena, she thought, soundlessly. And then came the sound, mimicking, Marlena. It came again, almost easily, almost naturally. Marlena. She shuddered and recognized the voice. It was Orinel, Orinel of Rota, whom she hadn't seen since the day on Rota when she told him that the earth would be destroyed. She had thought of him hardly at all since then, but always achingly when she did. Why was she hearing his voice where he was not, or hearing any voice where all was not? Marlena. And she gave up. It was the erythro plague that she had been so certain would not touch her. She was running blindly, blindly toward the dome, not pausing to tell where it was. She did not know that she was screaming. 67. They had brought her in. They had sensed her sudden approach at a run. Two guards in E-suits and helmets had moved out at once, and they had heard her screaming. But the screaming had stopped before they had reached her. The running had slowed and stopped, too, and that was before she seemed aware of their approach. When they reached her, she looked at them quietly and amazed them by asking, What's wrong? No one had answered. A hand reached out for her elbow, and she whipped away. Don't touch me, she said. I'll go to the dome if that's what you want, but I can walk. And she had walked quietly back with them. She was quite self-possessed. 68. Eugenia Insigna, lips dry and pale, was trying not to seem distraught. What happened out there, Marlena? Marlena said, her dark eyes wide and unfathomable.
Nothing.
Nothing at all. Don't say that. You were running and screaming. I may have been, for a little while, but just for a little while. You see, it was quiet. So quiet that after a while I felt as though I must be deaf. Just silence, you know. So I stamped my feet and ran just to hear the noise, and I screamed. Just to hear the noise of it? Asked Insigna, frowning. Yes, Mother. Do you expect me to believe that, Marlena? Because I don't. We picked up the screams, and those were not the screams of making noise. They were screams of terror. Something had frightened you. I told you. The silence. The possibility of deafness. Insigna turned to Dobisson. Isn't it possible, Doctor, that if you don't hear anything, anything at all, and if you're used to hearing things all the time, then your ears might just imagine they're hearing something so they can feel useful? Dobisson forced a thin smile. That's a colorful way of putting it, but it is true that sensory deprivation can produce hallucinations.
That disturbed me, I suppose.
But after I heard my own voice and my own footsteps, I quieted down. Ask the two guards who came to get me. I was perfectly calm when they arrived, and I followed them into the dome with no trouble. Ask them, Uncle Seaver. Gunnar nodded. They've told me this, and we watched it happen, besides. Very well, then, that's it.
That's not it at all, said Insigna, her face still white, from fright or anger or both. She's not going out anymore. The experiment is finished.
No, Mother, said Marlena, outraged.
Dobisson raised her voice as though to forestall any angry clash of wills between mother and daughter. She said,
The experiment is not finished, Dr. Insigna. Whether she goes out again or not is beside the point. We still have to deal with the consequences of what has happened.
What do you mean? Demanded Insigna.
I mean, it's all very well to talk about imagining voices because the ear is not accustomed to silence. But surely another possible reason for imagined voices is the onset of a certain mental instability.
Insigna looked stricken. Marlena said loudly,
Do you mean the erythro plague?
I don't mean that particularly, Marlena, said Dobisson. We don't have any evidence, only a possibility. So we need another brain scan. It's for your own good.
No, said Marlena.
Don't say no, said Dobisson. It's a must. We have no choice. It's something we'll have to do.
Marlena looked at Dobisson out of her dark and brooding eyes. She said,
You're hoping I have the plague. You want me to have the plague.
Dobisson stiffened and her voice cracked.
That's ridiculous. How dare you say such a thing?
But it was Gunnar now who was staring at d'Aubusson. He said, "René, we've discussed this little point about Marlena, and if she says you want her to have the plague, you must have given yourself away in some way. That is, if Marlena is serious and isn't just saying it out of fright or anger."
"I'm serious," said Marlena. "She was just bubbling with hopeful excitement."
"Well, René," said Gunnar a little more coldly, "are you?"
"I see what the girl means," said d'Aubusson, frowning. "I have not studied a fresh case of advanced plague in years. And in the days when I did, when the dome was primitive and had just been established, I had had virtually no appropriate devices with which to study it. Professionally, I would greatly welcome a chance to make a thorough study of a case of the plague with modern techniques and instrumentation, to find out, perhaps, the true cause, the true cure, the true prevention. It's a reason for excitement, yes. It is a professional excitement that this young woman, unable to read minds and without experience in such things, interprets as simple joy. It isn't simple." "It may not be simple," said Marlena, "but it's malevolent. I'm not mistaken in that."
"You are mistaken. The brain scan must and will take place."
"It will not," said Marlena, practically shouting. "You'll have to force me or sedate me, and then it won't be valid."
Insignia said, her voice shaking, "I don't want anything done against her will."
"This is something that goes beyond what she wills or does not will," began d'Aubusson,
and then staggered back with her hand to her abdomen. Gunnar said automatically, "What's the matter?" Then, without waiting for an answer, leaving it to Insignia to lead d'Aubusson to the nearest sofa and to persuade her to lie down, he turned to Marlena and said hurriedly, "Marlena, agree to the test."
"I don't want to. She'll say I have the plague."
"She won't, I guarantee that."
"Not unless you really do."
"I don't." "I'm sure you don't, and the brain scan will prove it. Trust me, Marlena, please."
Marlena looked from Gunnar to d'Aubusson and back again.
"And I can go back out on Erythro again?"
"Of course. As often as you wish. If you're normal, and you're sure you're normal, aren't you?"
"Sure as anything."
"Then the brain scan will prove it."
"Yes, but she'll say I can't go out again."
"Your mother?"
"And the doctor."
"No, they won't dare stop you. Now just say you'll allow the brain scan."
"All right. She can have it."
René d'Aubusson struggled to her feet. 69. D'Aubusson studied the computerized analysis of the brain scan carefully while Siver Gunnar watched.
"A curious scan," muttered d'Aubusson.
"We knew that to begin with," said Gunnar. "She's a strange young woman. The point is, there's no change?"
"None,"
said d'Aubusson.
"You sound disappointed." "Don't start that again, Commander. There's a certain professional disappointment. I would like to study the condition."
"How do you feel?"
"I just told you. I mean physically."
"That was a strange collapse you had yesterday."
"It wasn't a collapse. It was nervous tension. I'm not often accused of wanting someone to be seriously ill and of having it apparently believed."
"What happened? An attack of indigestion?"
"Could be. Abdominal pains in any case, and dizziness."
"Does that often happen to you, René?"
"No, it doesn't," she said sharply. "Neither am I accused of unprofessional behavior often.
Just an excitable young woman. Why did you take it so seriously?"
"Do you mind if we change the subject? She does not have any signs of brain scan change. If she was normal before, then she is still normal."
"In that case, is it your professional opinion that she may continue to explore Erythro?"
"Since she has not been affected, apparently, I have no grounds on which to forbid her."
"Are you willing to go beyond that and send her out?"
D'Aubusson's attitude grew hostile.
"You know that I've been to see Commissioner Pitt."
It did not sound like a question.
"Yes, I know," said Gunnar quietly.
"He has asked me to head a new project designed to study the Erythro plague, and there will be a generous appropriation toward that study."
"I think that is a good idea, and that you are a thoroughly good choice to head the study."
"Thank you. However, he did not appoint me commander in your place. Therefore, it is up to you, Commander, to decide whether Marlena Fisher can be allowed to go out on Erythro. I will confine myself to giving her a brain scan if signs of abnormality show up."
"I intend to give Marlena permission to explore Erythro freely whenever she wishes. May I have your concurrence in that?"
"Since you have my medical opinion that she does not have the plague, I will make no attempt to stop you, but the order to do so will have to be yours alone. If anything must be put into writing, you will have to sign it yourself."
"But you won't try to stop me?"
"I have no reason to."
70.
Dinner was over and soft music played in the background. Siva Gunnar, who had carefully talked of other things to an uneasy Eugenia Insigne, finally said, "The words are the words of René d'Aubusson, but the force behind them is that of Janus Pitt." Insigne's look of uneasiness deepened. "Do you really think that?" "Yes, I do. And you should. You know Janus better than I do, I think. It's too bad. René is a competent doctor, has a profound mind, and is a good person, but she's ambitious, as we all are, one way or another. And she can therefore be corrupted. She really wants to go down in history as the one who defeated the erythro plague. And she would be willing to risk Marlena to do it? Not willing in the sense that she wants to, or is eager to, but willing in the sense of, well, if there's no other way. But there must be other ways. To send Marlena into danger as an experimental device is monstrous, not from her standpoint, and certainly not from Pitt's. One mind is well lost if it rescues a world and makes it a fit human habitation for millions. It's a hard-hearted way of looking at it, but future generations might make a heroine out of René for being hard-hearted and agree with her that one mind was well lost, or 1,000, if that's what it would take. Yes, if it's not their minds, of course. All through history, human beings have been ready to make sacrifices at the expense of other people. Certainly Pitt would. Or don't you agree?" "About Pitt? Yes, I do," said Insigne energetically. "To think that I worked with him all those years. Then you would know that he would view this in a very moralistic sense. The greatest good for the greatest number, he would say. René admits that she talked to him on her recent visit to Rota, and I'm as positive that that's what he said to her in one form of words or another as that I am sitting in this chair." "And what would he say," said Insigne bitterly, "if Marlena were exposed and destroyed and the plague remained untouched? What would he say if my daughter's life were uselessly reduced to vacuity? And what would Dr. d'Aubusson say?" "The doctor would feel unhappy, I'm sure of that. Because she wouldn't gain the credit for the cure? Of course. But she would also feel unhappy about Marlena, and I dare say guilty. She's not a monster. As for Pitt, he is a monster. I wouldn't even say that, but he has tunnel vision. He sees only his plan for the future of Rota. If anything goes wrong, from our standpoint, he will undoubtedly tell himself that Marlena would, in any case, have interfered with his plans, and he will consider all to have happened for the good of Rota. It will not hang heavily on his conscience." Insigne shook her head slightly. "I wish we were making a mistake, that Pitt and d'Aubusson were not guilty of such things. I too wish that. But I am willing to trust Marlena and her body language insights. She said that René was happy at the possibility that she would have a chance to study the plague. I accept Marlena's judgment in this." "D'Aubusson said she was happy for professional reasons," Insigne said. "Actually, I can believe that in a way. After all, I'm a scientist, too." "Of course you are," said Gunnar, his homely face crinkling into a smile. "You were willing to leave the solar system and go on an untried trip across the light years to gain astronomical knowledge, even though you knew it might mean the death of every person on Rota. A very small chance, it seemed to me. Small enough to risk your one-year-old child. You might have left her with your stay-at-home husband and made sure of her safety, even though it would have meant you would never see her again. Instead, you risked her life, not even for the greater good of Rota, but for the greater good of yourself." Insigne said, "Stop it, Seaver. That's so cruel. I'm just trying to show you that almost everything can be looked at from two opposing sets of views, given sufficient ingenuity. Yes, d'Aubusson calls it professional pleasure at being able to study the disease, but Marlena said the doctor was being malevolent, and again, I trust Marlena's choice of words." "Then I suppose," said Insigne, the corners of her mouth curving downward, "that she is anxious to have Marlena go out on erythro again." "I suspect she does, but she is cautious enough to insist that I give the order and even suggests I put it in writing. She wants to make sure that it is I, not she, who gets the blame if something goes wrong. She's beginning to think like Pitt. Our friend Janus is contagious." "In that case, Seaver, you mustn't send Marlena out. Why play into Pitt's hands?" "On the contrary, Eugenia, it's not simple at all. We must send her out." "What?" "There's no choice, Eugenia, and no danger to her. You see, I now believe you were right when you suggested there was some permeating life form on the planet that could exert some sort of power over us. You pointed out that I was deleteriously affected, and you were, and the guard was, and always when Marlena was in any way opposed. And I just saw precisely that happen to Rene. When Rene tried to force a brain scan on Marlena, she doubled up. When I persuaded Marlena to accept the brain scan, Rene immediately improved.
Well, there you are then, Seaver. If there's a malevolent life form on the planet...
Now wait, Eugenia. I didn't say it was malevolent. Even if this life form, whatever it might be, caused the plague as you suggested it did, that stopped. You said it was because we seemed to be content to remain in the dome. But if the life form were truly malevolent, it would have wiped us out, and it would not have settled for what seems to me to have been a civilized compromise.
I don't think it's safe to try to consider the actions of a totally alien life form and deduce from that its emotions or intentions. What it thinks might well be totally beyond our understanding.
I agree, Eugenia. But it's not harming Marlena. Everything it has done has served to protect Marlena, to shield her from interference.
If that's so, said Insigna, then why was she frightened? Why did she begin to run to Dome, screaming? Not for one moment do I believe her tale that the silence made her nervous, and she was just trying to make some noise to break that silence.
That is hard to believe. The point is, though, that the panic subsided quickly. By the time her would-be rescuers reached her, she seemed perfectly normal. I would guess that something the life form had done had frightened Marlena. I would imagine it was as unlikely to understand our emotions as we are to understand its. But seeing what it had done, it proceeded to soothe her quickly. That would explain what happened, and would demonstrate, once again, the humane nature of the life form. Insigna was frowning.
The trouble with you, Seaver, is that you have this terrible compulsion to think good of everyone and everything. I can't trust your interpretation.
Trust or not, you will find we can in no way oppose Marlena. Whatever she wants to do, she will do, and the opposition will be left behind, gasping in pain or flat out unconscious.
Insigna said, but what is this life form?
I don't know, Eugenia.
And what frightens me more than anything now is, what does it want with Marlena?
Gunnar shook his head. I don't know, Eugenia. And they stared at each other, helplessly.